Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James, and on today's show, we're not going to be discussing what happened in the Spurs-Fulham game, but we might be discussing why it didn't go ahead. A little bit of an extraordinary situation to talk about on the pod. We're going to be getting Peter Rutzler's view on a dramatic day for all things FFC later on in the podcast. Also, we're going to be previewing Sunday's game against Burnley if it goes ahead. It's a weird time, isn't it? Here to discuss the non-events of today is Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
And Farrell Monk.
Hello, Sammy. How you doing?
Yeah, fine, thank you. I mean, I'd be lying if I'd saying that everything's wonderful. And, you know, how do you intro a game that didn't happen, Jack?
I don't know. I think you did very well. In non-events was a nice one, and a proper non sequitur today, wasn't it? Absolutely wrecked. But it is what it is. We're actually recording at the time the game would have been, which is quite weird.
I was going to say, like, what's happened already?
We're 2-0 up, and Geese has got two.
Baller.
2-0 up on their way to a 7-0 historic victory at our first ever visit to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I mean, Farrell, we had signs that this was going to happen earlier in the week. It was reported that Fulham had a number of COVID-19 cases. 18 were recorded in the Premier League in total. We don't know how many of those relate to Fulham, but I guess the safety of everyone concerned has to play a part. What's weird though is that it took so long for it to be postponed. It was, you know, when it was Tuesday when this announced that it could happen, and it was only 3 hours before kickoff that it was actually called off.
Well, I suppose that the Man City and Everton game on Monday was cancelled, and again that was only a few hours before kickoff that was postponed. So already a precedence has been set in that regard, that they can just call off games when they feel it's necessary to do so. I mean, the safest option is to call off the games when they don't feel like it's fair or too safe for the rest of the playing squad and the staff to then, you know, mix with another squad per se. So in the end, it's probably the right call. The exact nature of who and what and how is probably second to everything else involved, regardless of who it is, that, you know, it doesn't discriminate against, you know, whether this person is Frank Zambo and Geese or, you know, the kit man. So the safety is paramount, as we've been talking about. But we can probably talk about for endlessly about whether it's a good thing or a bad thing for the results and the Premier League. But now that we've had two games in quick succession called off, the Premier League talk about their COVID-19 protocols, two entire fixtures in such a short space of time being called off. It does call into question some of those protocols that the Premier League have, that they aren't really safeguarding the entirety of the squad and the players and everyone involved. Do they have to be more careful? I don't know what these protocols are, but something needs to be looked at.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. Like, it's one of those things where we're now in this sort of strange period between games. We've seen the Everton versus City game called off. We've now seen the Fulham versus Tottenham game called off. And the questions now are, how far does this go, and can we take things forward? And obviously we're going to look forward to that Burnley game at the end of the episode. But the question is, does that go ahead? Is it safe for that to go ahead? And when these things are not just livelihoods on the line, but, you know, players' health and the long-term effects. And we've seen long-term effects for players across the board, right? We've seen people struggle with it. We've seen players come out and talk about it. And yes, it's unlikely, but at the same time, we've seen that people do struggle with long COVID and what these things are. And in that regard, especially for a sports person, you know, to damage their lungs and the parts of their body that generally make this sport playable seems like a mad thing to do. So look, we were all massively pro sport coming back, our main pro sport coming back, but we've just got to be very careful. And at the moment, it feels like things are a little bit out of control, whether that's just because of the situation we're in over Christmas and the whole, you know, new variant and new strains that we're being told about. I don't know, but whatever that is and whatever that reason is, I think we just need to be very careful over this little period.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to call at the moment whether the Premier League are doing the right thing or the wrong thing. But there obviously is a protocol in place as to what happens if there are too many cases within the squad. And the Premier League does have some match weeks towards the end of the season where they can play rearranged games. They did foresee this happening. And this is only the third game this season to be called off. And look, the country's in a mess right now when it comes to COVID. They've announced more tiers today. Pretty much the whole country is either in tier four or tier three. And this is bigger than football, isn't it? And obviously players' livelihoods are on the line, but players' families' livelihoods are on the line. Players might live with their mum, their dad, their gran, whoever. And yes, they'll be worried about their own physical fitness, but you know, the proof is in the pudding that very few fit people suffer with effects of COVID-19. And there's a couple of cases, Alan Saint-Maximin at Newcastle appearing to be one of them. The risk is pretty low to footballers, but you can totally see that they might be worried about bringing it home to a member of their family that they might live with, etc. So I think the right call has been made here. From a Fulham perspective, does this suit us? Is this in our favour? I know it's a bit callous to look at things like, oh, a COVID-19 suspension, that's good for Fulham. Of course it's not, but Burnley, if we do play them on Sunday, Farrell, will have played two games in the time that Fulham haven't played games at a moment where physical fitness plays a key part over a tight Christmas fixture list. It could see us in good stead for Sunday's game.
I think probably not, I would go. You know, I actually think it's quite a good time to play Tottenham. And I thought it was funny that there was a lot of Tottenham fans saying, Fulham are being punished. You know, we're being punished because Fulham can't play. Make them play us now. We don't want to play them during our European campaigns. And I was thinking, Spurs are on a terrible run of form. This is a great time to play Spurs. They are, you know, they're stumbling. They've got a lot of players injured. And also, you know, look at things and the kind of madness of this period. This is exactly when you want to play the top teams, when they're feeling a bit jaded, you know, when the rotations can't quite work because there's injuries piling up. This is a game that I think tonight we would have taken on and taken at Spurs. And when you look at it in that kind of perspective, I think it's probably not a massive bonus for Fulham to be playing this. I think that would be wrong in where we are right now. And it took me by surprise that there were so many Spurs fans that thought that Fulham, you know, whether in jest or not, thought that Fulham were doing this some sort strategically in order to play them later in the season. Felt really off to me considering the run of form that they've been in.
Yeah, I do have to agree to a certain extent. When you're in this period, the festive period, when famously that fixtures come thick and fast, that and managers always talk about that, you know, we're having to, our squad is now stretched and whatnot. I it's one of those things that's really hard to tell because you can't really just experiment it either way. There's no sort of hard and fast rule for it. I think with Fulham, with their squad as kind of thin as it, arguably thin as it is really, when you look at our benches gone by, yes, there's a couple of good players there, but then you look around it, there are players that probably aren't at the level of quality that we need to compete in the Premier League, then maybe, you know, having a very congested fixture list isn't good for us, and having that little bit of rest can be very, very good for us, whether it's an extra day or two. You know, I think that Liverpool fans have been, you know, doing the odd tweeting here and there about and complaining about how, you know, they have to play so many games within like 2 days or something like that. But for Fulham, we had like the most amount of rest time in between fixtures. I think we would have been prepared for that anyway. And now it's sort of, we're at a stage where we're now unprepared for a situation that, you know, could have been in our favour. I think that when Burnley comes on Sunday, I think that we're probably in a better position as well. Burnley, the difference is that Burnley are on the up, really. I watched that game against Sheffield United the other night, and I mean, Sheffield United aren't playing well at all, but Burnley have been getting better and they're on a bit of a rise. I can't really say that they played that well to beat a particularly poor Sheffield United team, but you know, there were better times to play Burnley this season, and the timing on Sunday probably isn't coming at the right one.
No.
For Fulham specifically, you know, I think that a little bit of respite is probably a good thing, especially when you've got players like Tete coming back as well, which I think, you know, I saw Peter Rutzler talking about him being involved for the squad on Sunday, which is pretty good. But all it takes is one or two injuries in the squad, and that's where they seem to occur the most, is within matches. So the less matches at this time of the season is going to be great. But you got to remember, we all got to play 38 Premier League games in between September and May. So at one stage or another, people can have more fixtures than others. And, you know, at some stage, we can have less fixtures, and it all evens itself at the end of the day.
Yeah. Jack, looking at the relegation battle as a whole over the last few days, West Brom picked up such an impressive draw at Liverpool and then really threw it all away with that absolute demolition by Leeds. Brighton looked to be more sucked into the battle and really can't buy a win for themselves, particularly at home. But you have Burnley pulling away, potentially sucking in a couple of more teams, particularly Palace and Newcastle at the moment. Where do you think the relegation battle stands? Fulham obviously have been on a good run of form, but draws are not quite enough to pull us closer to those teams above. I'm finding it hard now to predict the relegation battle. I thought that it was going to be a surefire 4-team relegation battle all season, and now it's a bit more nuanced who's going to be in it and who's not.
Well, yeah, I think it would have been naive, if I'm honest, Sammy, and not to discredit you, to suggest that it would be a 4-team battle, because I always thought that Burnley were, you know, Burnley do this almost every year. And actually, if you remember the last time we were in the Premier League and in that ill-fated season, it was Burnley that set the low pace to begin with. And we beat them at the Cottage quite comprehensively. And weirdly, they were in Europe at that time, I believe. And they just didn't have the capacity to fight on both fronts. But once they realized that and worked out things and started to get back into their groove, they started picking up points, and they've basically done exactly the same thing this year. Now, Burnley moving up in the table, I think, was kind of inevitable. I mean, 3 wins in 5 is impressive from them. You know, they've got 10 points out of the last 15, which is, you know, nothing to
They were looking at. So bad, though, even by Burnley standards, and all the trouble in the backroom staff and Shaun Dyche not getting what they want. You know, I realise that I thought Burnley would come good, and they do seem to win inevitable games at Turf Moor, but this time around did feel a bit different for Burnley.
Yeah, as in there was a little bit of consternation about the fact that they hadn't really signed who they wanted to. But at the end of the day, you know, Shaun Dyche is fighting a battle on one front here, and he has enough players to make that system work. Yeah, of course, they didn't start the season well. Something that we've seen a couple of times now, not just in that season in 18-19, but it was perhaps most vivid then. And I think we've seen it again this year where things just didn't click. And ultimately, I think over the course of the season, that will even itself out. I think them catching up with Newcastle and perhaps Palace, although I think Palace will have enough, it is probably a good thing for us. I still think Newcastle are the side to get dragged into this. And I'm going to bang on about this until Newcastle physically cannot be dragged into the battle anymore, I imagine. But, you know, they're the side that I can see being dragged into the 5. And I think there will be 5. I've always said I think there'll be a 5th team that drops in. But I don't think it will be Burnley. I can see Burnley finishing a comfortable 13th. But I do think the Newcastle are in trouble. And yes, they've got 2 games in hand on a lot of teams and a game in hand on us. But no, those games in hand are against City and Villa. They're not easy games to be looking at. And I really do think that they're going to struggle this season with what they've got going on, with the fact that Steve Bruce has just hit the panic button, which he did at Villa. And he was like, oh, the fans are causing hysteria. And you remember how that went at Villa after that. So there is an element of this that I think, okay, Newcastle could be very much in trouble here, and Brighton play lovely stuff. But again, like you say, can't buy a win at the moment. And while that's, you know, nice for us, I think it's a game that we look at, and you look at the Brighton game now again and think, okay, maybe we got a point, maybe more than we deserved. But at the same time, it's a game that if we'd won, we'd be sitting on top of them quite comfortably now, and with a game in hand, and looking a little bit less over our shoulders and more towards the boys in front of us. So, yeah, I think there will be 5, but I think the 5 will be Newcastle, Brighton, Fulham, West Brom and Sheffield United.
Yeah, I don't disagree with a lot of that. I think that, you know, as the season ebbs and flows, the teams in and around us, their form will ebb and flow. We're not anywhere near the top teams, of course. And, you know, their form tends to sort of be win a few, draw a couple, lose maybe one or two along the way. But, you know, when you're looking in the lower echelons of the Premier League, which where Fulham sit, you know, that's the form is very different. And then you'll get teams like Burnley have got 10 points from the last 15 available. And likewise, you get teams like you know, Brighton have picked up 3 points in that time as well. But there'll be points where Brighton suddenly pick up a couple of wins and then think, you know, things are looking brighter for them. And likewise, the same thing will happen to Fulham as well. You know, we've seen kind of the similar sort of things. You know, our form is not too dissimilar from Brighton, but would you say that Fulham are playing at the same level of Brighton at the moment? I would argue no. I think Fulham are actually playing better football, have been, you know, we've had quite a tough run of fixtures as well. Probably not got to the points that we deserve in the last four or five games. So if you know, and that's where sort of like the differences will lie. I think that Fulham specifically are probably in a better position than Brighton, because Brighton are on the down and Fulham seem to be on the up. But, you know, if you go to look at the relegation battle as a whole, you know, I do think that Burnley will be looking over their shoulder. I don't think they're quite out the woods yet. I think that if things don't necessarily go right for them, it's quite easy for them to get back into a spiral again.
Well, we shall see. Fulham will now have a game in hand, like some of our rivals in the relegation battle. But like many of our rivals, that game in hand is a pretty difficult one away to Spurs. The only crumb of comfort I've got, and this is massively optimistic, but depending on when that Spurs game gets rescheduled, and let's say it was May, I don't think it's going to, but maybe Fulham fans back in stadiums by then, maybe, you don't know, maybe we get to go to the game. That's the only crumb of comfort. I'm being very wildly optimistic there, because I don't think fans will be back in stadiums properly this season, but you just never know. So I'll keep my very rose-tinted glasses crossed on that one. Just before we have a break, on Sunday's podcast, we'd like to invite you to a live recording, because today is episode 299, but on Sunday, it is due to be episode 300 of the Fulhamish podcast, which is very exciting. So our plan on Sunday is to stream the episode live on YouTube. So the plan is that at 6:30 on Sunday, all of the kind of original Fulhamish cast, the people who were here first, myself, Jack, Farrell, Ben and Dom, will be recording an episode live on YouTube, and you'll be able to ask us questions. And we'll record an episode whether the Burnley game happens or not. We don't know at this moment, and it's kind of futile to speculate. So please come and join us on YouTube. Basically, the idea is that it's warts and all on YouTube. So we will record, we will press play at 6:30. We'll be live. The podcast might not get recorded for another 5 or 10 minutes after that, because it sometimes takes a lot of faffing about to get the podcast recorded. You'll see me making all my mistakes that I do on every single episode. We'll chat in between the breaks, etc. So come along 6:30 p.m. on our YouTube channel, Fulhamish 300 Live. And of course, if you can't make it on Sunday, we will be recording the podcast and you can hear all the frivolities then. Jack, are you ready to be live to the world and all of the airs and graces that surround a recording of the Fulhamish podcast to be broadcast?
Me, go live, or always, Sammy, always.
Farrell, what do you think, what do you want people to be asking you on Sunday? What kind of questions would you like to spice it up, especially if the Burnley game doesn't go ahead?
They'd probably ask how Sammy is able to cut down what gibberish I say into something that's largely cohesive. I think that's probably the one that's on the fans' lips, really.
Yeah, your long wielding sentences will not get the chop from me, because we'll be live and there's nothing I can do. People will see how long a foul monk answer is to what did you think of the lineup today?
Yeah, exactly. I think apart from that, I think what can Fulham do to stay up this season? And hope Scott Parker is listening to us as well and is joining in.
As usual.
If Scott wants to join us live for the episode on Sunday, then he is more than welcome. Well, please do join along. You don't have to pay anything. You don't have to do it. Just go to our YouTube channel, 6:30 on Sunday. We'll, of course, discuss the Burnley game if it happens. And if not, then you could just ask us silly questions and we'll just chat bollocks for an hour.
If it's not, it's such an open book. If it doesn't go ahead, that pod could go anywhere. Absolute chaos.
Obviously, I want the Fulham game to happen. But it could be quite funny if the Fulham game doesn't happen and we just have to wing it for an hour, basically.
As opposed to what we normally do.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope for one long disagreement between Jack and Dom.
Me and Dom will just start quoting the Football Factory. It's going to be fun.
Oh, Jesus Christ. It's going to be like a Rangers v Celtic ding dong for an hour. And me, Farrell and Ben will just have to sit there shrugging our shoulders throughout the whole thing. Right. We're going to take a quick break. Afterwards, we're going to chat to Peter Rutzler on his take of a weird day to be a Fulham fan. Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here, and I am joined by the Fulham writer for The Athletic, Peter Rutzler. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you, Sammy. Very good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you. Hope you had a good Christmas and all of that. And I know you said on the last podcast you were hoping to take a bit of time off, but I feel like events have dictated and you've not taken much time off. And here I am taking more of your time. So I feel terribly bad. But it's been a dramatic day in Fulham land, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been a dramatic day, I guess. That's the best way to put it. And interrupting my precious time off, less you, more the news, I guess. Interrupted the Queen's Gambit. I was on the final episode when first got wind that something was afoot, so it took me hours to get back to it. I have finished it. Very good. Would recommend watching it on Netflix.
Oh, good.
Obviously the game was postponed due to a COVID outbreak at Fulham, which is never something you want to hear, and I do hope that those affected make a speedy recovery and that it's not too serious. We've seen that the impact it can have when you look at like Newcastle and some of their players, and Hopefully Fulham can bounce back quickly and make sure that it doesn't spread. But as we've seen, as the case numbers rise across the country, it becomes less of a surprise, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, do we know how many players or staff at Fulham are affected by this? We know that it was 18 tested positive amongst the Premier League. And place like City must be making up a substantial number of that, but you'd imagine Fulham are a decent proportion of that if it was enough to call the game off.
Yeah, there were a number of positive tests. We don't know the precise number, and we wouldn't know the names either, just due to medical confidentiality. It would have to come from the player or the club on that. But it was enough to cause concern among the club on Tuesday afternoon. For them to reach out to the Premier League and say that there may be an issue here, and obviously that developed, and then by Wednesday it took until 3 hours before kickoff before the Premier League came back and told both clubs that the game was postponed based on those cases. I'm not entirely sure if those numbers actually came in that Premier League round of testing. I think there may have been outside testing done by Fulham for those tests that came back on Tuesday, which has led to the more alarm. And then obviously after it was announced that the game was postponed, the whole squad was then, and staff were tested again on Wednesday. And I think those results will be important in terms of, when the team can get back to preparations for Burnley and that game itself, which at the moment, considering everything, that's also in doubt.
I mean, is Motspur Park open? I noticed today that City reopened their training ground. So is Fulham in complete lockdown at the moment?
So Motspur Park is going to be deep cleaned. So you naturally assume that it's not open. Of course, however long that process takes, in terms of, and that'll also be, as I said, dictated by the test results that come back, will sort of guide on what happens next there. But yeah, as I say, it's going to be deep cleaned and then it'll go from there. As we saw in Manchester City, there's reopened and that allows them to prepare for the Chelsea game. So when we are considering Fulham's next game, that's kind of a big thing about the training ground and personnel and being able to work. If you can't work, then you can't prepare for the game. And there's scope for postponement in that regard. So, So at the moment it's difficult. It's obviously quite soon as we're talking anyway, to know exactly precisely what the timescales are and everything like that. But yeah, as I say, Motspur Park's been cleaned.
And do we know why it took so long for the Premier League to announce this as postponed? Jose Mourinho did an Instagram post earlier on Wednesday saying, "Greatest league in the world, don't know if we're playing a game in 3 hours," dressed in his tracksuit. You uncovered this on Tuesday that the game was in severe doubt. And then it's not until 3 p.m. ish on the Wednesday of the game that the Premier League did call it off. Do we know why it took such a long time when clearly we knew that there was a problem?
No. I'm not entirely sure why it took so long. As I said before, on Tuesday, afternoon, Fulham were getting their results back, and then they started the dialogue with the Premier League. The Premier League themselves, when postponement was confirmed, detailed that it was due to a number of positive cases, but also players showing symptoms today. And you'd naturally think that may have been an important factor if it wouldn't have been mentioned otherwise. But otherwise, we were all the same as Jose Mourinho, really, from both teams. You know, Fulham were preparing for the game as normal. They would be going through their normal routines, preparing to leave for the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But until that announcement came in, which was only 3 hours before kickoff, which was very late. And, you know, and as Mourinho verbalised on Instagram, it's frustrating for everyone. But yeah, it's, well, not entirely sure why it was so late, but you can only imagine that one, the cases that came back on Tuesday night, and then also players displaying symptoms, if, you know, going from what the Premier League have said.
And has there been any more really from the club, any more details? I guess it is easy as fans to kind of make the jump from Scott Parker was isolating and then suddenly it hit through the rest of the squad. But then surely logically, Scott Parker wouldn't have been allowed to return to work and unless he was completely clear. I don't know. Is there any more on maybe how this happened, or it was there an event that caused so many players to get it at the same time? Or is it just the nature of what we're dealing with, that with these players in such close contact to each other, that if one person gets it, it's likely to spread like wildfire through such a close-knit unit?
It's hard to speculate on that. I mean, it's, you know, probably Fulham are asking the same questions themselves. In terms of Scott Parker, he returned 2 negative tests after a member of his household, a member of his family tested positive in self-isolation. So he didn't get his Christmas dinner, and he had a very different Christmas. I think that's fair to say. But so he came back in on Monday, having had those 2 negative tests, absolutely fine. And of course, obviously, the news breaks on Tuesday. Think, well, you know, I mean, you can easily make that jump, but I think, you know, it's too difficult to make that sort of conclusion. And you know, as we're seeing, I think it, you know, it's reflective of the situation across the country, and especially in London and the Southeast. You know, Fulham are not the first club to have issues. Millwall had to postpone 2 games over the Christmas period because of a COVID outbreak themselves. So Fulham aren't alone in that, and I'm very sure they won't be the last club to be affected by this. And it's just one of those things that we're going to have to sort of adapt to, really. I guess the Premier League stance, as outlined in their statement after postponing the Tottenham game, is that they're very confident in the protocols in place, that they can reduce the spread, and that football is safe to continue in that way. And I guess, you know, I think there has been talk about a circuit breaker, but I think there's a real sense that that's not something that's going to happen. One, in terms of schedule, but also because of those protocols. You know, they do have confidence in them. But you know, right now, as obviously with cases going up, then it increases the chance that this can happen. You know, you can pick the virus up in all sorts of situations. And unfortunately for Fulham, it's afflicted them. And the Spurs game on Wednesday night fell foul of it.
And in terms of time scale for the Burnley game, it's a Sunday midday kickoff. It was already a pretty tight turnaround for Fulham, you know, from a Wednesday evening to Sunday midday. Do we have any idea as and when we might know whether this game goes ahead or not?
No, I mean, you can just judge from how late the Tottenham call was. I think a key part of it will be whether, as I was saying before, how much preparation Fulham will be able to do, whether they're able to train, what the test results come back from, what the test results are like when they come back. And as you say, it is a tight turnaround, which is why this game is in doubt. It looks like Manchester City's game against Chelsea is likely to go ahead. They've reopened the training ground. They're now back working and they're able to prepare. I think the protocol is that originally anyway was for, you know, if you had fewer than 14 players, then you wouldn't actually be able to play. Now, I guess that changes when there's risk of more exposure and you can't afford to take that risk. And then also, you know, the ability to actually train and things like that. So those are all factors that will come into it about whether the Burnley game will be able to go ahead. And obviously, at the moment, it's just too soon to say. But as I say, it's in doubt at the moment.
Okay, well, thank you, Peter. I appreciate there isn't loads of detail that you can give at the moment, but certainly following Peter on Twitter is probably the fastest way you're going to find out if that Burnley game is going ahead. He was certainly one of the first to break that the game wouldn't happen yesterday. And Peter, there's an article should be out right now as you listen to this himself and Charlie Eccleshare. Peter, it's just kind of covering the timeline of the events that have happened in the past week leading up to that postponement on Wednesday.
Yeah, it just outlines how the postponement happened and what it means for the upcoming games and a broader context too in terms of the Premier League and things like the vaccine, for example, and what the Premier League sort of stance on that is going forward as well. So definitely worth checking out just to give a synopsis of what's happened over the last couple of days.
Yeah, and if you want to read that, theathletic.com/Fulham pod if you'd like to subscribe to The Athletic. And if you're looking for the breaking news, Peter was very quick on the postponement yesterday of the match, and following his Twitter at Peter Rutzler is a great one to follow if you want to make sure that you're getting the latest Fulham news first, because he's got his finger on the pulse, our Peter.
even on the Sun Lounger.
Yeah, even when he's on his Christmas holidays, this man does not skip a beat. Peter, thank you for chatting to Fulhamish today, and I guess we will see what happens on Sunday.
Yes, yeah, we'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here with Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
And Farrell Monk.
Hello, friends.
Well, thank you to Peter for giving us the lowdown on everything that he experienced today. Lots of hush-hush announcements and back and forth between him and the club, as you would expect, as the Fulham writer for The Athletic. But good to get a lowdown on exactly what went down today. An interesting day, and we will wait and see whether that Burnley game happens on Sunday or not. But lads, let's assume for now that it is going ahead. It's a massive game for Fulham on Sunday, and Jack, at a place that we don't have any fond memories at all, Turf Moor. It is probably our least favourite ground, maybe up there with Goodison Park in the country.
Yeah, it's not been a happy place for Fulham, has it?
Very nice.
easy. We slot in pop culture references here like nobody's business. Yeah, no, we don't have a good record there. And mostly, you know, the one that springs to mind is obviously the most recent visit where Burnley managed to score two goals without having a shot on target. In a game that probably summed up that campaign, really. But yeah, it's not been a happy hunting ground, and it's one of those strange games where it's somewhere that I've always kind of liked to have gone. I didn't go to the game last time around, so it's one of those places I've always kind of wanted to go. And obviously, my girlfriend's from Lancashire, so it's a place that I've driven past before. Would be my take on Burnley. So it's one of those strange ones where it always feels when you go there that we could get something, and yet we never do. And I figured that maybe this time round things would be a little bit different. This team seems a little bit more cohesive, has a little bit more about it. And I was really, really looking forward to this game and this matchup, to be honest, stylistically as much as anything else. So I am sad that it's not, you know, potentially not going to go ahead, but we'll very much see. And I think that if it does go on, then Fulham have a very good chance of winning this time around.
I mean, Jack, you said after the Fulham-Brighton game that the 0-0 record still stands because fans weren't there to see it. If Fulham win at Turf Moor, does that mean that the hoodoo's not broken either?
No, it only works in things that I want it to work for. And so obviously, okay, if we break the hoodoo. That hoodoo is based on the ground. This hoodoo is based on Fulham fans not being able to watch it.
Okay, that makes total sense. Farrell, you were obviously there that day a couple of years ago at Burnley with me, and it was a bleak day, an even bleaker day because you got left behind at a service. No, was it at the ground or at a service station? I can't remember now, but I remember you and Billy having an awful long way back.
Yes, it was. Thanks for reminding me. I didn't think that I would bring up that story again, but yeah, when it we left the ground, we were milling around for a bit while we're waiting for the coach. It was a pretty rubbish day, as we've already touched on. And then the coach drove away without us when it was not due to leave for another 10 minutes. And then it started pouring with rain, just to rub it in. So it certainly wasn't a happy place that day. But I mean, apart everything leading up to that was fine. Apart, you know, up to the game, it was a good day out. You know, there's the cricket club that's on the corner.
Yep.
Chips and gravy for a quid or something like that. I mean, questionable gravy, but at least the chips, I think, were made of potatoes. But it was largely enjoyable. The fans were in full voice. It's a three-story cricket club as well. So, you know, hopefully it's one of those away days where it's unique, and it's one of those ones that you would look forward to when you go. You know, I can't really remember the last time Fulham actually got a result there. I think the only one I can think of was when it was like 2009, 2010. I think Zamora, when he was on his rich vein of form and, you know, blasted a goal home in from quite an acute angle. I think that was when he was at his sort of like peak form and everything was going in for him. I don't think we actually won that day. It might have been a draw, but I think it shows, you know, perhaps it's one of those unique away days that you look forward to, but not for the football.
Well, yeah, the record is that Fulham haven't won at Burnley since 1951, a 2-0 win on the 21st of April. If there's anyone listening to this podcast that was even remotely had a chance of beer there, then please do let us know. And yeah, that day was a 1-1 draw in 2009. Since then, we've actually only been to Turf Moor on two occasions and lost both of them. So it's not a place that we've been to loads of times recently. Fond memories of that cricket club, though, Farrell. It is awesome there. On to the game, Jack. We know what a Burnley team's all about. It's Sean Dyche. They're well organised. They tend not to concede many goals. And Fulham, obviously, not doing so well in attack at the moment. How do you see Scott Parker trying to approach this? Do you think he'll stick with his counter-attacking system that he has been doing, or will he maybe adapt the system to try and hold on to the ball a bit more and try and break Burnley down that way?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure how he goes about this. And, you know, obviously I was looking at the Spurs game in the last episode and working out different things. And I don't think you go man for man with Burnley. And I think it would be a case of just trying to get Ademola Lookman on the ball and trying to make things happen. And it'd be interesting to see if he went back to a kind of 4-2-3-1 as opposed to the kind of five at the back that we've seen. You know, there isn't too much of an overload from Burnley in regard to other players from midfield getting forward. It is, you know, mostly the front two and the two wingers. The two central midfielders don't tend to pop up with too many goals, which means that you can kind of mark man for man a little bit more against the Sean Dyche side. And I think it would have been an incredible test for Joakim Andersson and Tosin Adebayo in terms of what they bring aerially, what they bring aggressively, and how much they would have to fight against Wood and Barnes, who are starting to find their rhythm again a little bit. And you know, also in terms of stopping the crosses from players like Dwight McNeil and whoever would play on that other side, whether it be Johan Berg-Gudmundsson or whatever. But there's lots of different, you know, elements to this Burnley side, but you know vaguely how they're going to attack. And what I'd be interested in is if Scott went back to that 4-2-3-1, would it have included Alexander Mitrovic when actually the physical battle is perhaps not what you want against a centre-back duo of Tarkowski and me? Actually, what you want is to be able to you know, to face them up, to get them one-on-one and try and attack them that way, because, you know, you're probably not going to get much change out of them in the air. And so in that regard, I would love to have just seen how Scott would have lined this up. I would have probably done that, gone 4-2-3-1, push Bobby Reid up top, I think, maybe, and gone with two out-and-out wingers to try and really, you know, push that in and get into them and play with those inverted wingers, kind of supporting a striker who would like to get the ball in the back of net, and then bring Mitrovic on to kind of jackhammer it if we needed to late on. But I think it would have been a game for Tom Kearney.
Yeah, I like that you're talking about it like would have been, and almost like you just know that it's probably not happening.
I've convinced myself it's off, and actually I don't know why I've done so. I'm just absolutely convinced this game isn't going to go ahead.
Yeah, I'm also pretty convinced as well, but I guess we just have to wait and see, like with all things coronavirus. No point making any plans ever. Farrell, would you go back to 4-2-3-1? Would you play Mitrovic? I get Jack's point about not wanting Mitrovic, but then again, I feel like this is the kind of game where it's his bread and butter, and he's always up for the fight, even if it is against, you know, tough centre-backs like Tarkowski and me.
Well, the thing about this game is that you have to look at, and it's, you know, there's, you can talk about we need to play our own game and that's how we're going to get results, but you know, you can only face the side that's in front of you, as a phrase old as time. And Burnley play a particular way, and they are used to not having a lot of the ball and defending and having that low block and defending in numbers. And they don't mind having their fullbacks one-on-one against a winger, because they'll be prepared for them getting around and having either a covering midfielder or a centre-back coming in and taking the way. I think we've got to look at other teams that we face this season and see how we can get success out of that. And we had one recently with Newcastle. And as we know, Steve Bruce sets up that team in kind of a similar way. And what we did, and what we did very, very well, is tempt them out the shell. You know, we had a lot of possession in and around our own box, and that's how we were sort of getting a lot of joy, because then we were finding space in behind to sort of like have them on the back foot. And we were doing really well. And I think that's the way we're going to actually do it with Burnley. The other way, and I do take the point of having, you know, Akerny and Mitrovic up near top, because spaces will be limited in around the box, and Mitrovic will try and do absolutely everything to sort of shift it a couple of yards and bully the, you know, me and Tarkowski to try and get shots away. I think to start off with, I think we've got to go the opposite way and, you know, stick with what we've got and what we've been playing with so far. You know, and having Bobby Reid in that sort of wing back, winger position that he's been doing so well in, because he's the one that can have it, picking it, that ball up in deep positions, playing neat little 1-2s, and all of a sudden, you know, we've got Burnley backpedaling, and that's not where they want to be. I think that's the way we're going to sort of get joy from this Burnley team. That's not totally ruling out someone like Kearney, because he did feature in that Newcastle game and was largely effective, although didn't produce that many clear-cut chances.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens on Sunday, whether the game happens or not, what lineup Scott Parker picks, and whether we have anything to talk about for our Fulhamish 300 episode. It's all so up in the air. I mean, right now, I don't know what my plans are for New Year's Eve. Not much. So trying to predict what I'm doing on the 3rd of January seems very, very frivolous indeed. Thank you very much for listening today. Hopefully it's brought you a bit of New Year cheer, because there's not a lot much going on around here as we enter lots of new tiers. I didn't mean to make that all rhyme, but it just did. Jack Collins, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm going to have to give up my crown to a new poet supremo, apparently, Sammy.
Yeah, I know. I just did that on the spot as well. Absolute madness. Harold Monk, thank you very much.
I'll just go for the very bland. Thank you very much.
Nice one. Have a happy new year wherever you are, and we'll see what happens on Sunday. Please do join us as well for Fulhamish 300, Sunday, 6:30 p.m. on YouTube. And if you can't make it, then listen to the podcast that will be coming out Monday morning. Come on, you whites.
You whites, happy new year.